This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President, simplifying a complex money world with investment programs to match a range of investment goals and life situations. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. And we work to bring you useful information each and every weekday. And we're ready to take on any money questions during this hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time. Or you can always leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. And we're going to get to that in a moment. But today on this special Invest Talk, we're going to spend this hour talking about real estate. Now, there are few financial topics that impact more of us than real estate, right? You usually have some connection to real estate, whether we own or we have rental properties, or maybe we just own REITs in our portfolio. And today we're going to approach real estate from a variety of angles. So whether you're shopping for your first home, maybe you're downsizing for retirement, which we see all the time with our clients, or exploring the idea of investing in real estate, I think you'll find something for you this hour. Now, Chevy Axon, he's a real estate agent and investor and a key member of our real estate team. And he will join us during the hour to add his insights on the market. And Chevy has been the number one agent out of nearly 1,000 agents at Evergreen Realty for the past 5 years running. And he and his associates give our real estate team at KPP Financial some real power when it comes to answering real estate questions and helping our clients make the best possible decisions. Now, we're going to talk about questions to ask your realtor, upgrading your house before selling, staging your home for the best appeal, treating your home as a retirement asset, and as well as the ups and downs of downsizing and much, much more. Now, for many people, their home is their most valuable asset. But should you count the equity in that home as part of your retirement nest egg? Should you consider your home to be an investment you can tap for retirement, or just simply another cost of living? Now, equity is an asset on the balance sheet, right? Everybody has their own personal balance sheet. And certainly the value of your home and the amount you owe on it and difference is your equity. And that matters to your full financial picture. But should it be counted as an asset in the retirement plan? That's a big question. Now, there's divided opinion on that. And some say retirement home is a place to live in, not a place that provides income, even though it provides utility for you. Now, if you plan to move to a smaller place, then you can consider that extra equity may be part of your plan, depending on how much equity you could potentially cash out, right? But then you have to consider taxes, fees, commissions for a sale to factor into everything as well. And the additional cost of maybe having a bigger home, that's an important factor to consider as well. When you downsize your home, usually your utilities drop. Your property taxes could drop as well. So that's something to consider. Now, we are fairly conservative. Now, we're not going to advise our clients to really bank on that equity unless they really are planning on downsizing soon. And I say that because 5 years from now, it could change a lot. The market might change and your equity might be different than it is today. Maybe more, maybe less, depending on the market and your particular situation. And so everybody's situation is different. And that's why when we sit down with clients and we look at what is happening with their financial picture, you have to take it all into account. And we see the home equity as a last resort. Sure, it's there if you really, really need it, but you want to go to other sources of income or assets to liquidate much, much before you tap into the equity of your home. Because if you do, whether you take a home equity line of credit or a second on your house, that's going to cost money, right? That's interest that you're going to be paying towards that loan. And if you sell your home to get that equity, well, you're still going to have to pay rent or to live somewhere, right? So it's not really a piece of equity that you or an asset that you really should bank on. All right. Now, real estate is the topic of the hour, and we'll be answering some select questions during this hour. But since we're recorded today, let's use our 24-hour listener line, and we'll answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Manny in San Diego, how you doing?
Good. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty well.
I was wondering how many years I took off of my mortgage, you would think, by doing that. My mortgage is like a $300,000. I sent a $20,000 payment, and my interest rate's about like 5-8%.
$20,000. You've probably taken off about, I'm going to guess, it's an educated guess, but it's still a guess.
Yeah.
I'd say about 5 years. It's a 30-year mortgage?
Yeah.
About 5 years.
Oh, great. That sounds good.
Yeah. You'd be amazed. Manny, if you just do a little bit each month,
yeah,
I don't care how much, you'll be amazed how fast you'll have that paid off. If you put in, I'd say, an extra, you said it's 300,000?
300,000, so I knocked off, yeah, 200, down to like 280 now.
Okay, now you're down to 280.
Yeah.
I'd say about five, and I know you can't do 500 a month. I'm not suggesting that you do that.
Right.
But if you did it at 500 a month, it'd be off, paid off in 10 years.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah,
perfect.
So that tells you how dramatic it can
that's
be.
That's actually, yeah, that's actually my goal was. I go, man, I'm going to have that paid off in 10 years, see if I can do it.
That it's, you know, it's a great goal. Let's say if you don't, you might just have like $40,000 left. I mean, that's a car payment. That's a buying a car for your house. You'll be so close that you'll be so happy with it. I've done this. I did the 10-year extra $500 a month on a 30-year fix. That's how I know it works. I did it about 15 years ago.
Oh, great. Yeah, so, I can't imagine just living mortgage payment free.
Can you believe that?
Think
how much money you can start saving at that point.
Yeah.
Plus, you don't feel like you're handcuffed. You want to go on vacation to a nicer cruise around the world? Go ahead.
Yeah,
the money.
Yeah, definitely.
Man, appreciate the call, Manny.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Nicholas in San Diego, buying foreclosures. How you doing, Nicholas?
Hey, doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I bought foreclosures in the past. I have.
Yeah, I'm looking in like 101. What do I need to know? What do I need to look out for?
Okay.
I just want to know what that's all about.
Buying foreclosures, you won't be alone, by the way. You'll have competitors out there doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the foreclosure process starts, Nicholas, when the person stops making payments on his house, okay?
Right.
The bank tries to work it out with them, and when they can't work it out, the house eventually goes into foreclosure. What the process is the bank is actually taking the house because they failed to pay. They're going to own the house. Banks hate taking in foreclosures. So what happens there is a foreclosure sale at the courtroom steps, and there's a person from the bank. There's usually anywhere from 2 to 10 other people like you and me. The minimum bid is going to be the mortgage amount on that property.
Okay.
That will be the minimum bid because the bank will take it. If you made an offer for that same amount and there's no other offers, you get the house. The trick, Nicholas, is you have to pay cash. And you have to pay it in the form of a cashier's check at the courtroom steps.
Okay.
So what happens is you got to have that money in your hand. You got to have a cashier's check in your hand. What I did is, let's say it's a foreclosure of $300,000. I would bring a $275,000 cashier's check and then about 10 more of 5 or 10,000 increments because you don't know exactly what it is. So you usually overpay and they'll send you the money back that you overpaid because you had to sign over these cashier's checks.
I see.
That's the process. The difficult problem is having the cash. Now, what happens after they buy the house? The bank, let's say the bank takes it back.
Mm-hmm.
No one's offering to buy it. Now the bank has got a real problem. They will immediately put it out for sale, and they're going to try to get this, do the same thing, try to get the minimum bids. When you see a foreclosure sale for sale by a broker, always lowball it. And then if you don't get it, just walk away. There will be millions more. That's how it works.
Yeah, because in our neighborhood, my wife looked up some foreclosure listings online. I'm not sure where she got it from, but she's looking at one that was $17,000. And in the area that she was looking at, the houses over there are going for around $500.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if that was realistic
No.
or if that's outrageous.
Nope, you will never find something like that. The $17,000 might be the amount he's underwater.
I see.
You can buy that $17,000, take over the loan, and you would have the property. That means you have to take over the loan and pay the $17,000.
Oh, I see. So it's not that great of a deal.
It's not that great. Don't know. Never is. Never.
Okay.
Thank you, Les. Appreciate the call.
Thank you much.
This is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and this is our real estate special. We can't take live calls today, but you can always ask your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues, a service of KPP Financial. For more than 20 years, helping Americans plan their retirement years with confidence. And we continue now with this special hour devoted to real estate, buying, selling, investing.
David Freeman, how are you doing, David?
I'm all right, Steve. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I want to ask you something. I believe you agree with me if I tell you that investing in properties, you know, real estate, you know, at some point is... You know, it's kind of painful going through, you know, vacancies and try to make this place to be in a market and rent it again.
Right.
And I was looking at getting the option and invest in stocks. And I read it the other day that invest in stocks, the returns is better than real estate. Are you agree with that?
Yeah, over long terms, yes, it is better than real estate. There's different kinds of risk, though. Real estate is much less risky, David, in the long run. Stocks are more risky. Therefore, there should be a better return in stocks, and there is over long periods of time.
I mean, I'm not in stocks. I mean, I don't know how that works, and I understand very little. I mean, there's companies out there that say, okay, we manage, you know, your portfolio, just if you have a certain amount of money.
That's what we do.
And we can manage for you, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, you guys do, like say, you guys buy and sell it on the right time.
Dave, money managers such as us, KPP Finance, that's our firm, you know, you allow us to trade your account. Basically, that's what's happening. And we will buy and sell mutual funds or stocks, depending on the kind of account you have and you want and how much money you have. We will manage your account for you, and you pay us a small quarterly fee to do that.
So you guys, let's say you guys have a stock, you guys like it, then you guys just purchase and...
Yep.
That's what it is?
Yeah. We make the decisions of buying and selling for you. You just look at your account and make sure that no one's stealing your money. And the way to do that is you use an insured SIPC, SIPC insured custodian. A big company that's insured by our government holds on the money. Therefore, if you do that, then a money manager can't get the money.
Like Bernie Madoff. That's what he did.
Yeah. He was a custodian of his client's money. So he just stole it. Don't do that.
Like me, I mean, you guys you do that for a living. Yeah, I mean, you
That's
guys
right.
manage. I don't understand those charts, you know,
Most
what to buy,
don't,
when
that
to buy, you know, what price you should sell it. I mean, I tried that before, and I lost.
Yeah,
and
most people...
I mean, I never made any money on stocks.
I hate to say this. Most people try it. And we know, Justin and I and my firm, we know they're not probably going to be successful. We'll be happy to teach you, but it takes so much work, David. It takes a lot of time and effort. You know,
and knowledge, not just that. You can try and try all you want, but if you don't really have the knowledge and the expertise to really understand a lot that goes on in the markets, not just about specific companies, but the economy in general, different types of assets and things like that.
And so that's why you hire people like us. It's as simple as that. Dave, if you want to talk about it, give me a call at the office or send me an email, and I'll talk about it and tell you how we do it and what we do.
Definitely. I would like to, because, I mean, I already have two properties, the rentals, and I know it's a pain in the rear. And, you know, I would like to.
They are a pain.
I have them. There's something else besides that.
Yeah, I've had rentals for many, many years. They are a pain, I must say. David, give me a call. Yeah. We'd love to talk to you.
All right. Very good, Steve.
Thank you
so much.
I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. We're talking real estate today. Upgrading your house before selling, staging your home for the best appeal. Just some of the topics on the table. We're going to talk to real estate agent and investor Chevy Atkinson next.
Now, Invest Talk Real Estate. Chevy Atkinson. real estate agent and investor, speaks with Justin Klein about treating your home as a retirement asset.
For most people, their home is a very significant part of their assets and maybe even their retirement assets.
We've talked a lot about this in the past, Justin, and you know what a lot of people forget about is the opportunity cost, right? So a lot of people that have owned properties for a long time have way more house than they really need. And so what I'm finding is a lot of times they have all that equity tied up in their property when they really need maybe a quarter or half of the house that they have. And they're forgetting about the opportunity cost of that money that's kind of locked in their property, right? So as you know, a house can be an asset, but it also can be a liability. So if, say, you have a $1 million house when you only need a $500,000 house, if you can take $500,000 out by selling it and downsizing it, a lot of times you're going to make a lot better return with that $500,000 than just having it locked in your property.
Yeah, right? And you're paying property tax on that larger property, more upkeep on a regular basis, right, with utilities, et cetera. So it is smart, and we've helped clients with that as well.
We just recently helped somebody in Central California
exactly
to downsize, and that's going to be a huge benefit. I mean, if you're looking at coastal properties in a lot of areas of California, the cap rate as a pure investment is 3 or 4%.
Yeah, not very good at all.
It's not good. You can get them a lot better return than that. So.
Yeah, so it just makes sense that you downsize, take that equity out of your home, own a place that is more tailored to your needs in retirement, mm-hmm. right? And take that equity out and earn a good, decent return on that, hopefully in a conservative manner, but you can earn a decent return, and that suddenly becomes a home that is, or a piece of asset that somebody has that now is dual purpose, right? It can produce income and produce a place for you to live. So it's a lot more bang for the buck in that manner.
Exactly. You want to turn your home into an asset. What's interesting is we've had a lot of clients buying coastal properties that ideally don't have HOAs, and our clients that are traveling a lot, they'll actually make it a vacation rental when they're not staying there. And they're getting their trips paid for, or even better. So it can be an asset, it can be a liability. Most of the time it's better for someone to downsize, buy a smaller property, and keep them separate. But some people have kind of a hybrid investment / home to live in as well. And we can discuss that option with clients as well.
888-99-CHARTER is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. How do we go to Dave in Burlingame? How are you doing, Dave?
Thank you for taking my call, and I love your show.
Thank you. Thanks for calling.
My question is, I understand how it's important to pay off your mortgage, especially when you're around age 50. My question to you is, would it be a good move to take the money that you have saved in your 401k to pay off your mortgage? I'm currently 47. Okay, would that be a good move or not?
No, it would not be, Dave. Why do I say that? The 401k is for your retirement, and the house is also for your retirement. So saying that, you would think, well, it makes sense, does it not? No, I like you to have two different types of assets there, not just all your money in one asset. Okay, I still think it's a great idea to pay off mortgage, pay down mortgage, get those things paid off. But I don't think you should do it with retirement money. That money is tax deductible as you put the money in there. And the only other tax deductible you have is the mortgage payment, the interest. Not that that's why you should have a mortgage. I don't think you should have a mortgage. I think you should try to pay it down. I would much rather see you take a little extra money every month. And I know it's tough when you're working stiff and you're not making a lot of money and a lot of free money. But I'd much rather see you pay $50, $100 a month and use that extra money to pay down that mortgage and continue to fund your 401k.
I appreciate your answer, and basically leave the 401k alone, mm-hmm. Add whatever additional money that you can.
Whatever you can.
To pay it off.
You'll be a surprise, Dave, how fast it will take down that mortgage if you're disciplined and do it every month.
I appreciate your advice. Thank you for taking my call.
Let's talk to Santa in San Diego. How are you doing, Santa?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, but thank you for having me on your show. But I wanted to ask you about children. Let's say I have my 18-year-old daughter. She's very ambitious, and she saved some money and all that. And we went to open an account at the bank, and I wanted to see what your opinion is on, like, to make the best. I know it's very little interest or little profit they can make out of their little income, but just the beginning, what would be the best route to take?
Okay, well, she's so young. Did she have any earnings last year or this year? Did she work?
This year.
Okay, yes. So are you going to open up an IRA for her? Is that what you were thinking?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. We just opened a little checking account in the bank and applied for a credit card.
Okay, so the money that you put in the market, Sana, is money that you don't plan on really touching for a long time. So don't.
That's fine.
So if it she's doing that, then she should put it in like any kind of account, a discount account, like E-Trade or Scott Trade, those kind of accounts. Open up an account in her name, and then she could buy something like the S&P 500, which is you can buy all 500 companies with one position called the SPY. It's an ETF, and you can buy it and just hold it, and she can ride the market in that. And you can do that with very little money and very little cost.
Okay, so you do trust the Scott Trade because we have an office right next to where I work.
Yes, they're SIPC insured, SIPC insured, up to $500,000. So, yeah, she will never have to worry. They're the custodian. She'll never have to worry about her money, someone trying to steal it.
All right.
Let me tell you who steal money is. People that manage other people's money that they do not have SIPC insured. So never, ever give your money to somebody who's not SIPC insured.
S-I-P-C. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Sana. Thank you very much.
All right, have a good day.
Now we're at the halfway mark of this Thursday Invest Talk. We're talking real estate this hour. How best to invest? What about income property, single family homes, apartments? We're talking about it on Invest Talk.
Our Invest Talk podcast continues. First, a couple of words from KPP Financial and a question for you. When did you last review your entire investment portfolio, not just look briefly over the documents? Steve believes this is something that should be done quarterly, every year at the very least. Why is this so important? You need to make sure that you're achieving the goals you want before you run out of time. And if you're just checking your statements each month and putting them back in the drawer, Steve believes you need to take a closer look. You may be missing opportunities or taking too much risk. Invest an hour with Steve. Start the process going. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review. Or you can call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. It can be done easily from anywhere in the USA on Skype or telephone. And now let's continue with the podcast. More Invest Talk now with financial advisor and licensed realtor, Justin Klein. This is our one-hour real estate special recorded program, but you can still get your questions to us on the 24-hour anytime line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, there are four real estate investment strategies that you can deploy on your own, and they have varying degrees of risk and reward as well, and varying degrees of time it takes on your part to really handle it on a consistent basis. Now, the first one is using sites like Airbnb or VRBO to rent out your current residence or maybe a vacation home that you already own. This is the quickest and probably simplest way, maybe not simplest, but one of the simplest ways to start somewhat investing in real estate. You already might own it, right? But you can now utilize that space. Say you go on vacation, you can now rent out maybe a single room or maybe your entire home to a prospective user of Airbnb or VRBO or any other sites out there. And you can now monetize that space that you aren't using maybe on vacation or even when you're still living there, just renting out a room on a regular basis. A lot of people do that as well. Or maybe a vacation home. And what's great about this is that there's no real additional overhead costs. If it gets rented out, great. You get cash flow. VRBO or Airbnb, they make a little bit of money as well that's paid by the person that's renting it out. And you get cash flow, which is great. might not be for everybody, but that's a quick way that you can start monetizing the current assets that you already have. Now, another way is to buy a real estate investment trust, or maybe a fund, an ETF or a mutual fund that invests in real estate investment trusts. So it's diversified. And there are a lot of different types of real estate investment trusts, ones that cover the commercial retail space, meaning retail shops and malls and strip malls, etc. There's real estate investment trusts that focus on industrial spaces, others on apartments, others on owning single family homes. So there are various types of real estate investment trusts, and you can trade them in your brokerage account, your IRA, your 401k if it's a self-directed brokerage account. It makes that very simple to invest in them. And there's no, you get dividend on a quarterly basis. Some of them pay monthly. And that's it. You buy it and you collect your dividend. And there's no real ongoing maintenance of it, except for monitoring the position and the market dynamics, etc. Then there's the buy it and hold it. And this is how most people think about when they're looking at real estate investing is, I want to buy a piece of property. I'm going to get a certain level of cash flow. And it should always be a positive cash flow. I see this all the time is that people are playing real estate for the price appreciation. Right? They think it's going to go up over a certain amount of time. Well, that certainly could be possible, but especially after interest rates are now this low, you're going to see interest rates rise in general, and that's going to be a headwind to real estate prices to some degree. And so you're not going to have that price appreciation over the next 30 years like you have over the last 30, 35 years since interest rates have fallen so much. So whenever you're looking at real estate for buy and hold, make sure you have good, healthy, solid positive cash flow on a monthly basis, so that if you have some vacancies or maybe rents go down in a particular area over in the near term, you still have a little bit of buffer, and you make sure you're covering your monthly overhead costs of mortgage and insurance and taxes and maintenance of the property as well, because you still own it and whoever's renting it is certainly going to have costs associated on your end. So that's buying and holding. And then probably the riskiest would be flipping it. And, this is very, very difficult for the average person. It's fraught with a lot of potential challenges and risks that are involved, including the purchase price. Are you buying it at the right price? Do you understand the market to know that you're getting it at a significant discount, so that when you put money into it to redo the kitchen and the bathrooms and paint and floor and the backyard and etc., that you are not spending so much that all those expenses are overriding the profit that you will get when you go and sell that property. And you need to be familiar with the construction space to make sure that what is needed is what is obviously needed is all that needs to be done. Many times there could be cracks in the foundation. There could be major issues that you don't really see right off the bat, and you need to understand those potential risks, and those are the risks that really can kill you and make you lose a lot of money. So flipping a home is challenging. It's difficult. I know it sounds great and it's flashy, but it's certainly the highest risk type of real estate investment out there. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I want to hear from you right now. Give us a call. You can leave your message and we will answer it on the next show.
Steve's next date for portfolio reviews is April 25th. That's in San Ramon. And of course, no matter where you live, you can take advantage of these checkups by Skype and telephone. Just go to investtalk.com and look for the Invest Talk tab and then portfolio review.
Let's get back to our Q&A with Chevy Atkinson. Now, Chevy, a lot of sellers have kitchens that might be outdated, bathrooms that might be outdated, different parts of their house that need work, right? And generally, I think a lot of people have the question, should I fix those problem areas of my home or should I just sell it as is? And what type of fixes are usually worth the expenditure?
It's a great question, Justin. So, you know, what I always tell people is what sells homes are kitchens and bathrooms. Obviously, generally speaking, the wife is making the decision. So the kitchen is going to be what really sells. The master bath is also very important. With that being said, you know, I work with a lot of flippers that we buy homes both on the market as well as go straight to the trustee sale. And what I've found, though, occasionally to get the best return for my flip investors, sometimes we find that the neighborhoods really don't require a remodeled kitchen or remodeled bathroom because they're so popular and the range from the high to the low isn't that large. So it's extremely neighborhood specific. Sometimes my investors have a much better return, and so would a normal seller, by just leaving the kitchen and leaving the bathroom, knowing that the neighborhood is going through maybe a rejuvenation. And so the older homes are selling for enough of a premium that by the time you put in the money for the kitchen and bathroom, you're not getting it back out.
So you're saying a lot of buyers are redoing it themselves anyway, so they're not really going to care.
And they'd rather have it done their own way. So as a result, I'm seeing, like, I mean, take a neighborhood, for example, that's selling for $1 million. You know, a remodeled kitchen, a remodeled bathroom on the low end is going to cost, you know, probably close to $50,000. So if you can sell that same home for $950 to $970 and let someone do it on their own, save the time, save the effort, save the headache, and don't do it. If the range is $800,000 to $1 million, you can spend $40,000 or $50,000 and then get $1 million versus $800,000 to $850,000, then we'd probably advise them to do it if they have the money and they have the time and want to put in the effort.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So now, what about exterior features? Thinking of painting the house, maybe putting a new roof on. What if your pool is old?
Yeah, I mean, some neighborhoods, a pool home will actually go for a premium. A lot of times the pool home doesn't have any premium because the community has a pool. Pools, generally speaking, aren't the best investment for a property. And again, it's very neighborhood specific. But one thing that is true is in most neighborhoods, buyers don't have that much of a vision. So you need to show them the vision. So a lot of times you do need to do the kitchen and bathroom. But like I said, there's exceptions. But that's why it is important to have a professional truly analyze the market and tell you, is it worth it to do it or not? Someone that's selling potentially hundreds of homes, if I was only doing 4 deals a year, I'd be nowhere near the advisor to my clients as we are today because we buy and sell so many properties.
April is the official National Financial Literacy Month. And Money Management International, who is sponsoring this month-long awareness campaign, has assembled 30 steps to financial wellness. This one is all about assessing your financial situation. And here are some challenging questions asking for simple yes or no answers. Yes or no, save at least 10% of your net income? Yes or no, keep 3 months' net income in reserves for emergencies? Yes or no, plan ahead for large expenses? Yes or no, set and keep financial goals? Yes or no, follow a budget? Yes or no, comparison shop? Yes or no, regularly review your credit report? Yes or no, examine your checking account statements often? Yes or no, continue your financial education? Now, if you answered with a yes on all of those, you're in pretty good shape. Or like many of us, you have some things to work on. Even myself. April's Financial Literacy Month. InvestTalk is here to help. Now, do you have a question about any money matters? Use the phone, 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Or go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button.
Let's go to Steve in Anaheim. How you doing, Steve?
I have my money in a lot of different places. I have some deferred comp. I have 401ks. Huh? But I also have some money in annuities. And I always hear a lot of the investment programs talking about annuities are not so great. It's why they're not so good.
Remember, annuities are our insurance product. They're very complex. They're legalese. If you ever try to read that annuity document, you would probably get lost, okay?
Exactly.
And that works to the insurance company's benefit, obviously, because it is confusing. Attorneys can't figure that darn thing out. So I used to be in the insurance business, Steve. I know what they do. But let's make it simple. Why aren't annuities good? Because I don't like them either. Why? The thing that they hook you on is they guarantee you a return, right? It could be as good as 5, 6, 7% a few years ago. Bad thing about annuities, here's a couple things. One, you were required to hold on to them for a certain length of period of time, usually 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Number two, if it is a annuity that's tracked to the stock market, do you have choices? Like, can you buy the S&P 500 index or mutual funds or something like that?
I think it is, yes. I'm
okay.
Pretty sure.
So what they do is they give you choices to buy the stock market. But there's fees for this. The annuity, the insurance company charges you a fee. The mutual fund that you're buying charges you a fee. And the annuities are very high. Their fees are very, very high. They're kind of hidden, but they're very high. They also limit your return. You can't make as much as the stock market in 10 years. And the reason why they have holding periods, 10 years, because there's never been a 10-year period in the stock market's history where the stock market has not gone up. They know it's going to go up. That's why they can guarantee you that money. Now, annuities are a tax-deferred instrument. You never use an IRA to buy an annuity because it's already a tax-deferred instrument. But what happens in an annuity is you get a false sense of its growth because you don't have to pay taxes. You don't have to pay capital gains taxes until you sell it. When you sell it 10 years from now, all the capital gains that has been built up in that annuity are due. That means your returns, you say, oh, I made 20%. Great. Maybe you only made 10% because you haven't paid the taxes yet.
Oh, gosh.
And you don't know what that tax responsibility is. They don't know that until you sell it. So there's a lot of little negatives when, Steve, you could just go buy an S&P 500 index outside the annuity, and you'll do much better if you held it for the same length of time.
Well,
that's
thanks
why.
For the info. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. Annuities, everybody, it's only for special situations, really special situations, that you would want it. And usually that's trying to transfer your money to the next generation. Very, very special. Let's go to Mike in Escondido. How you doing, Mike?
Hi, good, Steve. How are you? My question is dollar cost averaging. And do you have a general rule of thumb of which particular... I mean, I have a basic understanding of it.
Okay. Want me to explain how it works?
Yeah.
This is the concept. It's not a hard concept, but it's very difficult to do when the market is crashing. It's just very difficult to do because that means you keep buying and you keep losing money. But you're supposed to keep buying. You're supposed to do it in good times and bad times.
Okay.
What it is putting the same exact amount of money, not number of shares, but the same exact amount of money to work on a very consistent basis, like once every 2 weeks, once every month, whatever system you decide to set up for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep buying. The idea behind the concept is, in the market's crashing and going down, you're buying more and more shares as the market goes down, and you're driving your average cost down as the market's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And in actuality, you want it to keep going down for long periods of time, but then the last few years before you retire, you want to shoot up. Now, that's not always in an ideal world. Yeah. But that's the concept. And when the market starts rallying, what happens is you participate in the rally by continued dollar cost average. You know, because the market's going up and you're still buying as it goes up, so you're making more and more money with the old stuff you bought months ago. What it's trying to do is get away from timing the market, Mike, because it's almost impossible to know where the bottom is or where the top is. It's more difficult to do it with individual stocks, Mike. It's much easier to do it with a mutual fund or an index fund or indexing, because individual stocks, it could go down and up regardless of what direction the market's going.
Yeah, okay.
So that's just harder to do. And in actuality, if you had a lot of courage, when the market's going down, you keep putting more money and more money and more money. You increase the amount of dollar cost average. When the market's going up, you decrease it.
Okay.
Dollar cost averaging is over months and years putting the same amount of money in the same position, usually not an individual stock, but a mutual fund or an index.
And in the end, your hope is that it goes up and just keeps going up and keeps going up.
That's right.
And there's dips along the way, but
yep. Because the stock market has historically gone up.
Okay.
You know what I mean? It always has so far. But these last, since 2000 to today, it hasn't.
Very good. Thanks, guys.
Good luck, Mike.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Invest Talk. This is our real estate special, and we can't take live calls today, but you can always ask your question on our 24-hour listener line, as always, at 888-99-CHART.
And now we continue with Invest Talk. This is our real estate special, a recorded program, but you can still get your questions to us on the 24-hour anytime line, 888-99-CHART, and we'll answer it on the next Invest Talk.
Now, Chevy, according to data from the National Association of Realtors, most people who are looking to list their home only ask two questions from their real estate agent or prospective real estate agent, which is, how much will I get for the property and what will my commissions be? And they miss out on so many other types of questions that are very important. So what questions should they really be asking before signing up with an agent?
That's a great question, Justin. You know, we actually have a list of 10 questions that we recommend that people ask their agents before signing up. Just to kind of do a brief overview of the questions that I ask when I sell my own properties out of state. Number one is, you know, what's the marketing plan that you're going to complete on the property? Another example of a good question is, you know, how many homes have you sold in the last 12 months? The average real estate agent only does about 4 transactions. Another question is, what do you do to market beyond my neighborhood? Because a lot of people will have the guy in their neighborhood that holds open houses, drops flyers, and those things. But, you know, in reality, in most areas, the buyer's coming from outside of the neighborhood. So, you know, what do you do as far as a marketing plan? What's your international marketing approach? What's your national marketing approach? How many buyers are currently in your database? Another good question that I like to ask is, what do you do as far as to get the home ready to sell? Because there's can be a big difference between an agent that just comes in and doesn't stage a home versus an agent that does stage a home, and it can make a huge difference. What's the average price your homes sell for compared to the list price? A lot of agents in the marketplace, I find, will do what's called buy a listing, where they'll go in and they'll promise the seller the highest amount for their home, knowing that that's going to be what's going to win them the listing, and then they'll hammer and hammer and hammer the seller down and sell nowhere near the original listing price that they promised.
So you're saying they overpromise and underdeliver.
Exactly. It's actually a strategy. We call it buying a listing. Mm-hmm. And I've competed with agents that do it. I try to educate sellers on it. I'd rather undersell, right? Underpromise and overdeliver. And it's proven that if you list your house too high to begin with, it'll end up selling for actually less in the long run.
Because it sits on the market for too long.
Because it sits on the market. It can have a stigma to it. And it can create a problem for a seller. So I don't buy listings. I tell people, here's the range. Here, you know, I make suggestions on what they can do to get to the high end of the range. And I tell them if it's worth it or not. We analyze it. It depends neighborhood to neighborhood.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to John in Walnut Creek. How are you doing, John?
Hi, very good. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it.
I just calling to get your advice. My wife and I are 37 years old, and we both maxed out our 401k. We maxed out our Roth. We have 2 young kids. We put away about $200 into each one of their 529 plans. What advice do you give for additional savings that we have? Do we put it in a CD, or I don't want to just leave it in savings. So,
John, first of all, do you have money set aside for emergencies?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you have a mortgage?
Yes.
What kind of mortgage is it? Is it a 30-year fix, a 15-year fix?
It's a 30-year fix.
Okay. Do you pay extra on it every month?
No, we don't.
It says you're maxing out your 401k, you're putting money aside for your children, you have enough emergency money set aside. The next step I would do is, do you have any credit card debt?
No.
Then I probably pay a little extra on my mortgage every month.
Okay.
What I did for years is you write out a check for the mortgage payment, you write out another check for $200 or $100, whatever you're going to do, and you write on that check, apply to the principal. That takes your principal down every month. And then what happens is, as that eats down the principal, more of the normal monthly mortgage checks goes to the principal too.
Yeah, so I guess you're kind of earning money off this. Saving money from not paying so much interest.
Exactly. If you ever figured out a 30-year fixed, you're actually paying, after 30 years paying that payment, you'll be paying like 2.5-3 times the amount of the money you borrowed. Did you know that?
That's very good advice. Yeah. You're investing in real estate.
Exactly. You're taking that investment, pulling it down. That real estate, it's a real estate investment. That's all it is. If you have those other things already set up, that is a very good way to invest in money. because you're already maxing out your retirement account. So that's important. And you're already putting money aside for your kids' education. That's very important. You don't have any credit card debt. What else can you do? Get that mortgage on you in your late 30s now. You want to have that mortgage paid off by the time you're in your 50s.
Yeah, that'll be good.
It will work if you do this. It will. You will have that done. You will.
Okay.
John, I appreciate the call.
Best advice as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
Our time is up for this hour. We hope you enjoyed our real estate special. If you have any questions or comments, you can go to investtalk.com and click on the Contact Justin button. I'll get back to you. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, executive vice president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us. Let's plan on getting together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.